Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast, rookie wide receiver, supermodel, and Stephon Diggs reaction edition. That's right, baby. It's Wednesday in April and we got a lot to talk about. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's a great day to be great. It's a great day to have the whole gang back together. Dwayne The Rock McFarlane, Chris Allen. Boys, we're back. Dwayne, the rookie supermodel, is live, baby. Let's go.
It's live. It's one of those things, Ian, where it's like, you know, I'm so excited about it hitting, but I'm also like, thank God it's live, like, because I've been working on it for so long and I've enjoyed it. Like, dude, so many improvements versus where we were last year. You know, I basically spent the month of March, like just researching all this stuff and finding ways to just think about it in different ways, testing a bunch of different stuff. So very excited to roll it out, man. And, you know, I think we made big improvements. So that's what it's all about.
Chris, we are here today to highlight Dwayne's excellent work, but also, man, how the hell is Iowa this week?
Oh, no, I'm not in Iowa yet. That's not for a couple of weeks. No, gosh, man, I'm so tired of traveling at this point. Like for the day job, I'm just glad to be able to like kick it in Ohio, minus you know, some tornadoes that have been rolling through the area for the past like couple of weeks. But yeah. I would say
Chris honestly, is going out there for some research for the tight end supermodel guys. As you know, Iowa, you know, they're the 100th percentile, like, you know, as far as program quality. So Chris is going to be doing some soil testing, water. We're going to see what's happening in that great state with these tight ends.
We're about to figure it out. Like I'll like literal boots on the ground, like out in Iowa, like for sure. I got y'all covered, but it's not even just about like the rookie supermodel that's out right now for wide receivers. Y'all, if you get a chance, go to the rookie, like the rookie model and check out like Dwayne's blue steel look. If you get a chance, that's part of the thumbnail. Like that is honestly, like that is the best part about it. It's not about the insights, not about the analysis. It's not about the grand takeaways that you can get from the incoming like prospects for this
every
class.
Time I see that picture, Chris, my main takeaway is how did I not get money out of being forced to exactly. Like, how did I not get someone to give me money to do that? I did
the pictures we have to take in order to do these thumbnails, they just get like every year it just feels like it gets like more and more ridiculous at the things that you got to do in order to it's all about the advertising. That's how it gets people going, man.
Hey, but the team does a good job. They make you look good, so you know I'm happy to
100%. Yeah.
Absolute goats, George, and the rest of our editing team. We appreciate you, and we appreciate you listening. Like, subscribe, do all that if you are feeling generous, because, again, loads of goodness here on the incoming class of rookie wide receivers, and we will also be talking about all things from the Stephon Diggs trade after a little bit. So, fellas, let's kick things off with the top of the rookie wide receiver supermodel, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. Dwayne, these are the only tier one wide receivers. Just how close are they? Because it's been this weird phenomenon on, you know, social media and anything you kind of talk NFL draft with, where I don't think I've seen anyone actually rank Malik Nabers outside of the top 10 prospects. Usually he's actually like inside the top six. Yet if you go out there and you just wonder out loud, hey, maybe this Malik Nabers guy could be better than Marvin Harrison Jr., you're instantly shouted down with, no, you're just, you know, bored of the process and this is absolutely ridiculous. To you, Dwayne, how close are the pretty much consensus top two wide receivers in the 2024 class?
Well, interestingly, before I did all this work, I think I was one of those people. I even said it on one of these podcasts. And now, after doing all the research and really digging into it, I think there's a legit stance you could take, you know, to put Nabers over Harrison. And the data backs it up. A lot of the film community feels the same way about it. I don't think you have to get cute. Marvin Harrison Jr. ranks as the 100th percentile prospect. That's number one on data back to 2018. Or anyone ever in the wide receiver supermodel. So he's clearly awesome. Number two is Ja'Marr Chase. Right after that, though, is Malik Nabers at the 95th percentile. Now, the draft capital is the number one weighted component of the supermodel. So right now we're using projected draft capital, which is based off a mock draft. So after the draft, we'll update this. Things could be changing. But just real quick, the other components are pedigree. So where did you go to school and how good has your school been at producing high-end wide receivers? And the main way we're doing that is by looking at where they went in the draft, and not just where they went in the draft, like their draft pick, Ian. We are also looking at what is that draft pick typically worth. And if a lot of you have heard of the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, basically Chase Stewart, super smart dude, he did this thing like 10 years ago now, where he went in and studied the value of an NFL draft pick, and he basically re-quantified what that means. So we're using that data paired with where they're getting picked to say, okay, here's the total points of value each of these teams have provided in the NFL draft for this position. So pedigree is a major component. And then production. And you guys are going to hear us say receiving yards per team pass attempt. Ian and I have been going back and forth over in the Slack channel. Like, what are we going to call this? Because saying those words every time is getting exhausting. So we're going to go with RIPTA. Ian, RIPTA, I credit you with that. RIPTA is what we're going to call that. So when you hear RIPTA, I mean, just think about Ian's muscles, or you can think about, you know, the number one production metric in the supermodel, which is the adjusted career RIPTA index. And so what this does is it accounts for a bunch of things. Number one, if a wide receiver does better when they're young, they get the most weight in the model for freshman, sophomore, and junior years. After that, honestly, it's not great. Like, it's not going to go into the model, but that's okay. They still get credit in other areas. We've got an ADOT adjusted component. We've also got a teammate adjusted component. And then finally, what the hell else do we have? There's another component. Quarterback, passer rating. So all those things get combined into one thing and we index it, which means you put it between the value of 0-1. And so that's the way the supermodel works. Those things all come together. And man, like, we're actually ahead of draft capital, folks. Like, the model is projecting better than draft capital based on, data since 2018. We're not gonna, like, scream it from the rooftops. Like, it's really hard to do that, but we're a little ahead. Like, we'll see what happens. Like, after this year, like, we may be like, oh, we're back behind draft capital, or we're slightly ahead of it the year after as the sample grows. But just wanted to get those things out of the way. But kind of back to your question you gave me. Yeah, these two guys are really close, and you guys can go check it out over on the site. I'm not going to, like, you know, name every one of these things, but essentially they both broke out early. Both of them come from very good programs. Ohio State ranks as number one, LSU ranks as number two. So they're getting percentile scores off of that. And then, like, all the other metrics that I just talked to you about, like, they did well in them. So the other thing that we use to help balance out against receiving yards per team passing attempt, sorry, RIPTA, I just said I was going to say it that way. So that's looking at them in the context of their team, right? As dividing by their team passing attempts. But we also want something that really looks at them on a per target basis. And the thing that rated the highest was their quarterback rating when targeted. Okay. This ranked better than their fantasy points in college. This ranked better than yards per route run. And it makes sense. Why? Because it accounts for touchdowns, completions. It counts against them for interceptions. So this graded out really well in the model. Shout out to Peter Howard, who was the first person I saw that was talking about this. And I had it in the data set and I'm like, I'm going to test this as one of the variables, and it showed up to be very strong. No surprise. Peter's always grinding on this stuff. So he was right about that. So shout out PA Howdy on Twitter for that, because it is now in the model. And it's a really good balance with something like RIPTA, because if you're on a super loaded squad and you don't get as much playing time, but you're still really good when you're out there, it's another way of helping off count when you play with really good teammates. So the model's super focused in on accounting for their environment in all sorts of ways. And when you look at these guys, they graded high in all these areas, Ian. So, like, I mean, there's just nothing bad about either prospect. Harrison comes out slightly ahead of where we are with Neighbors, but I would not blame anyone if they wanted to take Neighbors first in their fantasy draft. We'll see what their landing spots look like. If you're in Dynasty, I would say the move, Ian, like, I would trade down if I had the pick to get Marvin Harrison, just because people are so in love with Harrison. And it's not that it's bad, but because Neighbors is close enough, like, if you could get a major haul and move back two spots and say, you know, you could still get Neighbors. Now that's the key. Can you still get Neighbors? Mm-hmm. Then I think I would be trying to pull that move off. Like, if that means they're going to give me an extra first round pick or something along that. I mean, look, there are people that have been trading. I've seen trades recently where people are giving Jamar Chase away to get Marvin Harrison Jr. So, like, that's how high people are on Marvin Harrison Jr. So he's a really great prospect, but I think the potential sharp play is if there's some way you could move down and still secure Neighbors, I would. If not, just, you know, take Marvin Harrison Jr. and be happy. You're getting a great wide receiver.
Chris, when you're watching Marv out there, is there any comps that, you know, stick out to you in particular? Because hard to go through some of these games, you know, as a local, you know, Columbus, Ohio native, as I've told you guys, you know, every other podcast, there's a certain former stud Bengals wide receiver, not Jamar Chase, but, you know, a little bit before Jamar Chase's time, that I can't help but comp Marv to.
I mean, I can't think of who you might be talking about. It's 6'3", playing your traditional, like, almost like prototypical, like, alpha X wide receiver. Can't really think of a dude. Can't really
drawn a blank.
Yeah, I'm absolutely drawn a blank. So I couldn't tell you. But I mean, to your point, and kind of like what Dwayne was talking about, it's like, if you want to start interchanging, like, some of those guys from a value standpoint, I get it. And I think one of the things that a lot of folks in this, for this particular class, are starting to recognize is once we get to this point where it is like, you know, Neighbors versus Harrison, or even if there's some folks want to throw in the Dunes, and we'll talk about him here in a little bit, it's understanding the wide receiver archetypes and how they actually like separate from each other and from like from defenders and how they win on the field. That becomes like a larger part of the conversation. And for folks that haven't already, I would very much encourage you to go check it out. Dwayne sat down with Marcus and Trevor like over at PFF to sit down and kind of break down just like how you go through and evaluate like wide receivers and like what's that process that goes into it. I think Dwayne outlined a lot of what went into the model, and these are things that a lot of us don't really take into account. We watch the tape, we watch the film, we see a guy like Marvin Harrison who can win on the outside, who can create explosives downfield, and you see that the long strides and his ability to win in contested catch situations, you're just like, boy, that he's good. Like, he looks good on field. And it becomes a vibes, like, type of reaction that you get, like, when watching him, and don't get me wrong, but then at the same time, you can watch Neighbors win with, quick separation, like, off the line of scrimmage. You can see a Dunze just, like, blow past not just like linebackers, but also he's blowing past safeties. It's like each one of them can wind up generating or hitting the thresholds for success that you would see in a model like what Dwayne has put together. But understanding like how each of them can create, how each of them like can wind up separating like from, again, not just within each between each other, but once they translate to being on the field, that's where the conversation then lands. Like for our purposes here, it's like how much of this now becomes translatable to the NFL? How much of what they were doing in college becomes the things that we should start to account for once we are drafting Harrison Jr. or Neighbors or Dunze or whomever? And I think that's where it's like when you say like Marvin Harrison could be AJ Green or whomever, it's like, oh, well, now you start like once you start like associating them with a name, then people start that afterwards. It's like now you're like putting in like numbers, you're factoring in, like you're looking at historical like production and all of that, which is great. And that starts moving the hype train. And that's what gets people excited about drafting them. But then it's like, but it's the minutiae, it's the details, it's the, you know, do they play the game the same way as like those receivers that we're comping them to? And if that's the case, then okay, let's go ham. Let's start putting them in the 101, 102 conversation. But that's where, again, I would caution people from like when they do that, because like once we put that name in people's ear, it's like, all right, well now, like, are they going to be able to live up to the hype? And with Harrison, and especially, and also with Neighbors, I do think that's the case.
Dudes have been kind of 1-2 in this class in some order for quite a while, with Marv usually getting the nod. Obviously, LSU fans still a bit salty on Marvin Harrison Jr. winning last year's Biletnikoff Award by one single vote. PFF's top, you know, power five wide receivers over the past two seasons in receiving grade. Number one, Marvin Harrison Jr. Number two, Malik Neighbors. But to Chris's point, they do play very different. And that's why I get confused why people are just so hesitant to even embrace the idea that NFL teams could prefer Neighbors. And honestly, that's not really even up for debate. They do. Listen to Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, some of the most tuned in minds out there, and they will tell you there are, in fact, teams that have Neighbors higher on the draft board, but there are pretty much no fantasy managers out there believing the same. Right now, Dwayne, we are seeing Marvin Harrison Jr. as the wide receiver 10, looking ahead to 2024 redraft.
Yeah.
And honestly, we're about to see Nico Collins fall off that wide receiver 9 spot. So yes, we are going to have Marv inside the top 10. Looking at the rookie production from top 10 drafted wide receivers since 2010, the only one that has finished better than the wide receiver 12 was Ja'Marr Chase with that wide receiver 5 finish. It would be so much easier, Dwayne, to fade Marvin Harrison Jr. Jefferson, he wasn't a top 10 overall pick. So,
oh, you said top 10 overall pick. Mm-hmm. Got you. Yeah. My bad. I thought you were just saying rookie receiving.
Puka Nacua did his thing. Like, yeah, we've had some other options. And again, it would be so easy to sit here and say, oh my God, look at Mars, you know, ADP. That thing is through the roof. I cannot get behind that. It'd be so much easier to say that if we weren't pretty convinced he's going to land with either Kyler Murray or Justin Herbert.
Dude, Neighbors is the easier pick in redraft, too. I mean, you're getting in like how many spots later? Like, he's still more expensive than what people are going to believe. Like, it's going to probably give them sticker shock. But Neighbors is an easier pick just because he's so far behind Marv, and really, like, they're close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. Full 13 picks behind right now. And he's a guy who I was happy to see, you know, the GOAT wide receiver evaluator, Matt Harmon, come to a similar conclusion as I did with Neighbors, where I have my, you know, Google sheet of just random notes I, you know, write down as I'm watching these guys. And for Neighbors, I wrote down as one of my comps, like if Kadarius Toney highlights were an every week thing, because that actually is what you see out of this dude. And again, they're so different. You don't see Marvin Harrison Jr. catch a casual 10-yard curl and then just outrun two dudes, break some ankles, and turn into a 50-yard explosive. You do see Neighbors doing it. Now, you don't see Neighbors being a 6'4 beast going up there and winning, you know, these contested catches between two guys with Honda McCord throwing them the football in the first place. So again, you know, give and go with both guys, but truly believe and, you know, happy to see a supermodel agrees, Dwayne, that these guys are in a tier of their own. Let's talk about the other guy, though, that a lot of people do believe deserves to be in this conversation. Rome Odunze out of Washington, Dwayne. He sits alone in tier two of the rookie supermodel. So yes, you are quite high on him. Couldn't quite get him into that tier one, though. So what did you see as the main difference between Marv, Neighbors, and Rome? And why is Rome a not distant third, but a pretty clear third for you?
Yeah, well, the good news for Odunze is, like, you know, Washington is like picking up steam as far as like pedigree goes. You know, you look at this year's draft class, they're going to have potentially three wide receivers go in the first three rounds of the draft. Rome Odunze performed well despite playing with Jalen McMillan as well as Polk. So when you look at that, that's a very positive thing for Odunze. But like when you look at his numbers, they're just a little bit lower, right? So his adjusted career RIPTA is not quite on the level. And this is a guy that broke out a little later than the other two guys and really didn't have a great year in RIPTA until his final season. Like he had some okay years, but didn't have his great year until his last season. Now, look, I've read a ton, like from the film gurus. I've watched all these guys. I definitely lean into the evaluations of the other film grinders because I know they're like basically just watching this stuff the way, you know, I'm trying more, right, than I'm just studying these numbers for the last month. So I definitely watched them, and I loved your Neighbors. I love the Neighbors comment. Like, looking at Neighbors, like just watching them on the field, like he plays with a different edge, right, than Marv. That doesn't mean Marv's game is bad, but there's definitely something there. But whenever you look at, you know, Odunze, like when you watch him, like, dude, you're going to like the guy. Like, you're going to like him. He plays outside most of the time. He faces a lot of the top coverage. He's still been successful. But because he broke out a little bit later, that hurts him, you know, in the model. And honestly, he's the guy that draft capital is helping the most right now in the model without draft capital, which doesn't carry as high of a correlation to future fantasy points, but it's still pretty strong. It's 0.56. So when you look at that, Rome Odunze was at 0.64. So compare him to Marv at 0.78. Malik Neighbors, 0.76. So the last guy we've seen get drafted in the first round with a pre-draft capital in the grade range of where I've got Rome Odunze, it wasn't bad. It was Jalen Waddle. Think similar situation. Jalen had to deal with really good competition. Not saying he's the same player, right? Two different stylistic players in the way they like to play the game, but Rome comes in a little bit later. The next closest was Drake London, who graded out below Odunze overall in the supermodel, but he was slightly ahead of him in the pre-draft capital model, which was 0.70. So the major thing with Odunze, if he somehow slides in the draft, he would be hurt a lot more than if Marv or if Malik Neighbors. It would hurt all of them if they slid, but the way the model works, it's going to hurt a guy like Odunze more. So I would say that the NFL is propping up Odunze a little bit compared to what the model says. Having said all that, when I watch Odunze, I really like him. You know, I really like him as a player. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick. So I think he's going to be fine, just not quite in that same tier.
Sure does seem like he would have had a chance to be the overall wide receiver one in a different year, but when you're dealing with Marvin Neighbors, obviously that's going to make life a bit tougher. As I was going through some of his games, you know, had a few comps, and I see the allure with throwing the Davante Adams name out there, because just the way in which they went, it's everywhere, but it's not like there's just one specific, you know, it's not like Marv where you're just, you know, have some of the best body control and contested catchability we have seen in like a decade plus. It's not like Neighbors where he just goes from 0 to 100 as fast as you could possibly want. He can do those things, but again, it just seems like it's more like he's an 8 out of 10 in everything versus, you know, having this one specific skill that's just blowing everyone away. So I get the Adams vibes. I thought it could be kind of like a little bit less twitchy version of Brandon Ayuk. I think the Amari Cooper comp makes a lot of sense. And yeah, guess what? Even if you want to say middle class 90%, if you're anywhere close to any of those wide receivers, you're going to be pretty damn good at the next level. Chris, any sort of, you know, just comps out there that you're specifically loving for Rome? And do you think he could eventually end up, you know, maybe being more productive than Neighbors and Marv? Because again, if he can even get close to those guys, we're going to at least have a conversation about it.
Like I did like the Davante Adams like compliment when I heard that one first thrown out, because, and again, this is where like when you toss out a name, people will just immediately think to like do the recent production or just like the career highlights and be like, oh my gosh, he's going to be like the next like wide receiver one, and this guy that everybody's going to want to glom on to like from a fantasy perspective. Remember like at least the earlier parts of Davante Adams' career, like remember those portions where it was like this dude like might not even be able to make it. Aaron Rodgers like yelling at him for dropping passes and so on and so forth. And but I think the like the size comparisons like has me thinking about guys like either him or like Julio, I think like kind of comes to mind for that tall type of specimen, the guy that can win in those contested catch situations, but also has just the like the hand technique to beat like press coverage, like at the, like from right off the line of scrimmage. I mean, so much of his game mimics a lot of those guys where it's like, he can be that guy that can win in all areas of the field. And that's what the data has shown us so far. And you watch the tape, you see the same thing. So I don't see much of an issue with comping those guys to him. But like we were talking about beforehand, it's like once you start tossing out those names, it's like, all right, well, of course, like once we get to the actual NFL draft, where he winds up getting drafted, into Dwayne's point, if he winds up sliding, that's where we might have to take a step back and say, well, that might be the, let's say the high end comps, like for a Dunze. Whereas we also need to take into account, based off the situation, what the potential floor could be for a guy like a Dunze, should he wind up slipping in the draft.
And that is the thing with some of these comps. Yes, we are trying to be optimistic and, you know, probably more glass half full than we should be. You know, you'll hear people unironically be like, oh yeah, you know, we have Caleb Williams coming and he's Mahomes, and then Drake May, he's Josh Allen. And then, Jaden Daniels, he can be Lamar Jackson. So cool, we're getting the three best quarterbacks in the NFL all coming in again. Like, how convenient is that? So yes, want to, again, try to be reasonable enough with these comps. But in this case, legit, all three wide receivers projected to go in the top 10. It's at least warranted to be pretty optimistic about what they can bring to the table. Final two notes here. If you do pull up the Rome film, my God, this dude's like release game is absolutely unreal. Even with the screens out there, like a lot of times screen, okay, you're getting thrown the ball in a second. How much can you actually do? I have never seen a receiver like a Dunze, like actually like start running the tunnel screen inside, fake back outside just to give his blockers an extra beat, get the ball and then go make a play. So that really popped out. And then also, as bad as the Michigan film might've been for Michael Penix Jr., hey, you know, he's not coming out until next year, but Will Johnson, the Michigan cornerback one, dude made life really tough on Marv and some of the game's best talents out there. Dunze had him in a blender for a good portion of that game. If you guys remember, early fourth down, got wide open deep, more so on a busted coverage, but missed a potential touchdown there. And then late in the fourth quarter, or early, mid part of the fourth quarter, okay, fine. We actually saw Penix connect with Odunze for like a 40-yard gain after he toasted Johnson on a double move. Ticky-tacky holding call took that one back. So again, don't be confused by that. You know, 87 scoreless yards really did stand up strongly against the best competition Washington faced in all of 2023-24. All right, guys, let's talk about the best of the rest now, because if you have been paying attention at all to this class, there are far more than just three really good wide receivers out there. Dwayne, one of which is a teammate of a guy we've already been talking about, Brian Thomas Jr., not sitting alone, but he is actually down there in your tier three. Now, when you kind of look at his size, speed profile, and the fact that, you know, he wasn't doing a ton for us before 2023 specifically, he does start to kind of hit that boomer busty tier. How concerned are you about what we saw from Brian Thomas Jr.? Because again, you can see the upside there, but I just worry a little bit if we're, again, going maybe a little too strongly with the guy who, yeah, has the tools, but does he have what it takes to be a legit wide receiver and not just an athletic specimen who could ball out in college?
Yeah, I think the way you explained it, like, he is a more of a toolsy player, but he did put a lot on film last year. He put a lot in the database as well last year. And it was his third year in college, which you go back to when we started, like, what are the years that matter the most for these wide receivers? It's 1, 2, and 3. He put up a 2.86 RIPTA in his junior season. So that worked out well for him. but not quite as good as you might have expected whenever you compare him like to his teammates, which he gets credit for having to play with other good teammates, played at LSU. He's getting a bump for his pedigree. LSU's in the 80th percentile of the model, but 0.18 Ripta over expected. That's not near as good as Rome at 0.85, Malik Nabers at 1.09 over expected, and Marvin Harrison Jr., who had to play with Chris Olave, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, even Garrett Wilson, he was 0.91 over expected. So Brian Thomas Jr. was not on the same level, but I think the NFL is telling us that, right? They're saying, hey, this is the guy that might go in the mid to late first round, which is typically where you get more into, hey, there's some traits you can attach onto. You're hoping the player develops. We could talk about Addie Mitchell at some point here as well. But with Brian Thomas, he has that blend that's going to get people excited. And here's the thing that really helps him out in the model. He actually scored higher in the model than I thought he was going to. And that comes back to that career targeted quarterback rating. So when he was targeted and he was given his opportunities, he came through in a huge way, 132.8 targeted QB rating. So whenever the guys out at LSU decided, hey, I'm going to throw it to Brian Thomas Jr., typically really good things happen. That was in the 81st percentile. That's ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. That's ahead of Malik Nabers and well ahead of Rome Odunze. So in that category, he was the best guy in this class besides Troy Franklin, who came out at the 86th percentile. So when you put it all together, yeah, he doesn't come out as strong as the other guys, but he comes out in that 70th percentile in the supermodel. And it's a big tier break, right? Marvin Harrison's at 100th, 95th percentile for Malik Nabers. Then we get Odunze, like we said. And if you guys wonder how I make these tiers, just go look at the supermodel table page over on fantasylife.com for free. That's how the tiers get made. And then 0.70 for Brian Thomas Jr. But then there's another drop off. So technically, you could have said I should have made another tier break. The only reason I didn't is the other thing I look at are the hit rates based on where you finish in the model. And they're pretty similar for a couple of other names that we'll talk about that really go in that tier three, tier four range that we can talk about in a minute. So Brian Thomas Jr., yeah, not a long body of work, but still broke out by his junior season, which was really good for him. And then he was just so good when targeted. And we know this draft capital right now. Now, he is a guy. He's another guy that if draft capital didn't come through and he somehow ended up being an early second rounder, it's going to hurt him more than it would some of the other guys that we've already talked about.
Mentioned the tools in passing, but yeah, they are a phenomenal 6'3", 209 pounds, and can still run a 4.33 40. So yeah, you know, when you do have that sort of long speed, maybe you don't see him ripping off the same sort of quick change of direction moves that someone that's, you know, not as big as him, aka Malik Nabers, might be able to do. But man, just watching these LSU games, and I know both guys kind of get criticized almost for like the lack of kind of overall route trees they were asked to run there, but when, you know, they were just putting Nabers on one side and Brian Thomas Jr. on the other and pretty much bomb it to whichever one didn't have a safety over the top, seemed like it worked out pretty well for the number one ranked scoring offense in all of college football last season. So Chris, you know, watching some of Brian Thomas Jr., I got vibes of one of my favorite, you know, players of the last, you know, decade of watching football, who sadly didn't quite work out as much as we wanted to in fantasy land. But Martavis Bryant was the one name that kept coming to me. Faster, not faster, but more of like a rich man's DJ Chark. Shout out another LSU Tiger as well, was something I came away with. So yeah, I do see the potential for this to go south into a Denzel Mims range of things, if you want to try to be fair, you know, with the upper and lower end comps. But certainly, Chris, seems like you could do worse than betting on a talent like Brian Thomas Jr. coming out of LSU with the tools and, to Dwayne's point, at least one season of demonstrated really high production.
Right. And I think that's where a lot of like fantasy managers, like going back to what we've been talking about with these wide receivers, is once we can understand like the archetype of receiver that they are and how they their play style, like when they were in college, that gives us a sense of what their potential fit within an offense could be. And with some of the guys in the top tier, it's like, yeah, Marvin Harrison primarily plays as your, like, again, your prototypical X receiver, primarily playing outside. But does that mean that he isn't capable of running routes from the slot or winning on the interior? No. Same thing for Nabers. Same thing for Odunze. Now, with the limited sample, and I say limited because we didn't see a guy like Brian Thomas really break out until his final year, Do we know if he has the ability to do that, like on a consistent basis? And can he be deployed in such a way that once he gets into the NFL, like, will he be pigeonholed into that DJ Chark, like that outside burner type of role that makes him a bit more volatile from a week to week perspective? And so for a guy like Thomas, it does become two questions. Like one, like what is his draft capital, potential draft capital going to be? And then also his fit within the offense. Because if you could see him going to a team that could need a guy like him, that would actually, and also be paired with a quarterback that has the arm and, let's say, even the offensive line in order to have those like 5-7 step drop back concepts that would allow him to open it up and actually chuck it downfield. Cool. Fine. No questions asked. I'll invest with him. Go LSU. Thank you for giving us Brian Thomas, and we'll keep it pushing. But if he winds up going to a separate team, let's say, like, for some reason, since you gave the DJ Chark comp, let's say for some reason the Panthers wind up drafting him, then of course the moment that you see he gets drafted by Carolina, it's like, even if there is a chance he could compete for targets in that particular offense, what is the chances that those targets are going to be valuable targets? What are the chances that any looks that he would wind up getting from Bryce Young would be worthwhile to us from a fantasy standpoint? So I think in this, like for Brian Thomas specifically, the lack of early age production for him, combined with that like single season of production that we saw from his final year in LSU, and especially given that was an offense that was predicated on almost like the air raid concepts that we would think of, like our air raid type of offenses that we would think of. It's just Jaden Daniels like widen up, throwing it and just letting it rip, almost like Joe Burrow was doing it with Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson like back in their heyday. But does that, well, like for a guy like Brian Thomas, who doesn't have the same sample of being able to operate both inside and outside, like will that actually be something that will allow him to either one, quickly translate as a rookie to being that guy that could play at all three levels of the field? Or is it something he can develop into if he's given the opportunity to do so? And with Thomas, it becomes a little bit more of a question than we would have for the guys that are sitting ahead of him in the ranks.
I will say real quickly on Thomas, I kind of had that same sentiment going into watching him, just like kind of reading the national narrative on him. But like his deep target rate was 20%. That's in line with the NCAA average since 2014. So basically he wasn't just getting his shots down the field. Now that's where a lot of his value came in. Mm-hmm. But he had 50% of his targets come between 0 and 9 yards from the line of scrimmage. Yeah. So he was a little more versatile than I expected. And while playing outside 88% of the time, like if you go watch his film, you'll see a lot of these little sit down hitch routes. Like, you know, he's basically setting up his route tree. Am I running a hitch or am I running a go? Most of the time it's like a hitch or something little quick underneath, but he's trying to set up that deep ball. So I just want to call it out because I think he's a little more versatile than he probably gets credit for. I think the big question with him is, can he develop that intermediate game where honestly your route stems and all those sort of things become so much more important, right? Understanding not just how to run a route, but how to get the defender in the position that you want so your route can be successful. And that's where we see the truly elite wide receivers in the NFL separate themselves. They can attack that middle area of the field. When I say middle, intermediate range, 10 to 19 yards down the field. That's where the bread gets buttered. You're going to do your short stuff. You're going to get some stuff behind the line of scrimmage. You want to be able to take your deep shots. But if you're truly good at your craft, like that's the area where you truly unlock that upside as an NFL wide receiver, as well as being a great fantasy asset. So I think he's a little more versatile than people give him credit for, but also to your point, Chris, I think he still needs work in that intermediate area of the field.
Right. And I'm wondering though, and I guess one question for you, Dwayne, is that, and I don't think it's, I don't know if it would be as strong of a correlation, but I do wonder if you are put into an offense like that, like where it is, like we're just going to line up two dudes on the outside and then y'all go do cool shit like downfield. Like if that is a part of like what your offense is going to be. So there's going to be, I guess, less of a chance for you to be able to run more routes on the inside and be able to be like matched up against like linebackers versus always seeing either press coverage or like the top corner of the opposite side. Like, does that matter? Like, will that actually be something that we have to account for, like from that standpoint? Because if that's all you're asked to do and you're good at doing it, that shouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, or should like, it's something we take away from them. But at the same time, it does leave us with those questions of, well, can you do the other stuff that might be a little bit more relevant for our purposes once you do get into the pros?
Yeah, I think it's really an interesting question. Like if I had to grade the guys based on the data and watching them, and honestly reading great work from people like Matt Waldman, even, you know, stuff from Josh Norris, things from Brugler, like trying to get my arms around as much as I can as far as what the tape people are saying, I lean a lot on Waldman because I understand his process and like he puts it all out there for everybody to understand. This is how players get graded. This is why I give this kind of value to separating, to route running, all those things. But he actually graded Thomas as one of his top route runners in the class, which definitely had my attention, because so he sees the traits for him to be able to do more. Will that translate at the next level? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But if I had to break this class down and say the guys that I think can win anywhere, lining up anywhere, I think it's Marvin Harrison Jr. Doesn't matter what you ask him to do, he can do it. Malik Nabers, same way. Romo Dunze, probably the same way. I think the next guy, and it comes down to size and being able to beat press coverage, but the guy that I saw with the most versatile profile was Xavier Worthy. I know we'll talk about him in a minute. I'm a little worried, again, he's an undersized guy. Can he beat press? He's got questions for sure that he's going to have to answer at the next level. But just looking at his ability, you know, from a route perspective, his ability to beat different types of coverage with his speed, Worthy would be the next one. I think after that, everyone has some sort of question. Ladd McConkey would probably be next. Like, he's sneaky good, like at getting downfield, not just being, people think, oh, if you think you're just going to go watch this dude that's running whip routes all day, you're wrong. Like, this guy has a massive arsenal of setups to get people to bite so that he can get to that have access to that intermediate area of the field that we were just talking about. Actually, he's one of the best receivers in this class at that intermediate game. So I would put him in there. But after that, the rest of these guys, I think it's back to your question, Chris. Like, can they develop enough? We don't know. Were they just asked to do one of these things, or was it because like the coaching staff was like, eh, they're not really great and we can win with them doing this, so we'll just let them. Like, DK Metcalf's a great example. DK's still not great at all of his route running stuff in the NFL. He can't beat you like consistently at every level. I mean, he's a freaking beast. He's DK Metcalf. Just throw it over there. He's going to get it. But like, talking route running, but people were so worried about it, remember? Like, oh, this guy can run a go or a hitch route. He's not going to make it. Yeah, he did make it. And he's gotten good enough at the other things. He's not the best at the other things, but it's been enough to unlock more of his game.
Again, this is tier three foundational traits. It's wide receiver two plus upside. And what do those three guys that we just talked about have in common? Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy, and then DK Metcalf. They're all 4.3 or in Worthy's case, even faster than that 4.2. So guess what? Even if they're not breaking off their routes, you know, as smooth as someone like Chris Olave out there, I think they put the ever living fear of God into those cornerbacks enough so that they don't even have to be as, you know, as good of route technicians. And accordingly, I think you see that with Brian Thomas Jr. being able to still make some things happen with the comebacks, with the slants. I will say that, you know, a lot of what we were talking about, can Brian Thomas Jr., you know, win over the intermediate areas of the field or not? That's kind of a similar conversation as what Chris and I were having with Jaden Daniels last week. Because again, you just don't see a large enough sample, but then it's like, well, this was the number one ranked scoring offense. So they're doing something right out there. Again, I think having those tools though is the big story. And let's move on to the other guy then, Xavier Worthy. And also shout out to DraftKings, who is sponsoring this podcast and specifically this question. Wanted to, you know, save one of the best freaking, the best sportsbook out there. What the hell am I saying? For one of, not only one of, what am I saying? The fastest player that we've ever seen at the NFL Combine. 4.21 40-yard dash. And Dwayne, again, with Xavier Worthy, like, I hear you. He is not a one-trick deep threat pony. And when you watch him play, again, I just think it's the fact that these cornerbacks are terrified of him running past them. And accordingly, it makes his life that much easier. You did see in the Texas system, like some of those similar motions to almost the Miami Dolphins. Like, Worthy is not going to be the X wide receiver like Marvin Harrison Jr., where you just say, okay, you're going to get pressed, you know, deal with it and go ahead and just win these contested catch situations. They did a great job motioning him, freeing him up. So he wasn't going to get pushed around, because guess what? 165 pounds is going to make it a bit tougher for you to win, like the ways Marvin Harrison Jr. does. But hey, man, regardless of how he was winning out there, sure does seem like Xavier Worthy could wind up being one of the more productive receivers in this class. I'm not so sure that I'm going all the way down the DeSean Jackson, you know, rabbit hole. I thought that just, that's true. If we want to talk about generational skills, D-Jack's deep ball tracking is better than anyone out there. So while I wouldn't go that far, man, watching Xavier Worthy and just seeing, you know, I thought it was like rich man's Khalif Raymond, which I love Khalif Raymond, so that's a big time compliment. Don't get it twisted there. Who we wanted KJ Hamler to be. I think the Marquise Brown comps make a lot of sense. I mean, where do you fall here with Xavier Worthy, Dwayne? Because yeah, he's small, but it seems like more than ever recently, Tank Dell, Devontae Smith, you know, even Darnell Mooney a little bit. Xavier Worthy, while it'd be a lot tougher to project him to go ahead and win at the NFL level in the year 2000, year 2024 is looking a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. And this goes back to what Chris was just talking about, how players win. And I think the other part of that is coaches being more willing to be open to using your player that way. Like, that seems to make sense. Back, you know, even 5-10 years ago, Xavier Worthy just wouldn't be, you know, I say that John Ross was pretty small too, but wouldn't be a first round pick just because, like, it would immediately be, he can't do it. Versus now, you're getting some of these more innovative coaches coming into the league, and they're like, you know, I can find something with that guy. I can move him around. I could do what the Texans did last year with Tank Dell. So when I look at Worthy, yeah, he's 5'11", 165. It's going to be a challenge. Can he put on a little bit more weight? Yeah. But the guy has pretty good pedigree. Like, Texas hasn't been a great program. Texas recruits better than they end up looking once drafts happen and they try to send people to the NFL. So it's usually, you know, second, third, fourth rounders. So they get some guys into the league. You know, Devin Duvernay is a guy recently from Texas, but they don't get the first rounders. That hurts, you know, Xavier Worthy a little bit. But man, this guy was the number 13 wide receiver prospect in the nation in college, ahead of Harrison, Neighbors, and Thomas. Ooh. So obviously, like, he's got an ability. Great. That was high school, Dwayne. We're now talking about college and the NFL. I get it. But the point being, like, this guy's got the traits. And then it did show up in college. I think the biggest thing here for me, Ian, is, like, as a freshman, this dude went absolutely nuts. 2.81 RIPTA as a true freshman. So while he never quite got to those same levels again, he was still really consistent for the rest of his career. You know, in his junior and sophomore campaigns, he was really good. So he's at a 69th percentile in the adjusted career RIPTA index, which is the biggest metric that goes into measuring your production side on the supermodel. So that grades out really well for him. And he wasn't, you know, some people talk about, well, a lot of his targets came behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, but he also attacked all the other areas of the field too. And if you can do that, I think it's a plus, because that means your team can scheme things up for you. That can pad your target share by 3-5%. Why is that a bad thing? It's a bad thing if most of your targets came from getting schemed up and you never showed an ability to win at other levels of the field. Those types of profiles don't typically work out. We're talking about Kadarius Toney. We're talking about guys like Amari Rodgers. I've got a whole list of guys like that that are kind of with a lot of red flags. But Xavier Worthy is not one of those guys. Like, he's a guy, dude, he had a 32% targets per route run against man coverage. This dude is cooking man coverage. It's a big indicator for future success. It doesn't get a signal in the model because it's duplicative. Most of it gets caught by RIPTA anyway. But you always love it when you see a guy that can go out and win a man. And you know, what's the first thing NFL defenders are going to be told to try to do with a Xavier Worthy if they can? Press him and get him off his route. Well, he's already shown that he can win against man. Now, to your point, Ian, he did get schemed up a lot, got moved around the formation, lots of motion. But hopefully, if he can land with a coordinator that can still mix those sort of things in, and he can learn to win enough on his own. But let's be honest, he's going to get protected in most offenses. Yeah. They're not going to line him up on the line of scrimmage. Even if he's not in motion, he's probably going to be staggered off the line of scrimmage behind another wide receiver in some sort of a stack if the coordinator has any sort of brain. We can't always guarantee that, as what is Sigmund Bloom like to say, we can never assume rational coaching. So you guys can think of that what you will. But like, looking at Worthy, like, after the catch, man, he registered a yak over expected of 2.2. That was the best of all Power 5 receivers in this class. So this guy can do it. He's winning at all levels of the field. I think he's great. I know you mentioned that DeSean Jackson thing. I put it in the article because Matt Wallman actually talked. Matt's very stringent on the way he grades these guys. And I know how much he likes DeSean Jackson, but he put it in there. This was his quote from the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. If you guys haven't checked it out, like, you really should. Like, you won't believe what all you get in this thing. I mean, Matt breaks down every element of a player's game, but it says, if Worthy plays to his potential, he's not far from developing along the lines of Isaac Bruce and DeSean Jackson, two of the great primary options with dangerous deep games over the past 25 to 30 years. If he doesn't reach that tier of value, he still has the skills to realize what the emotionally troubled Titus Young, wow, a flashback, Titus Young, if you guys remember him for the Lions, flashed early in his career, or what many thought KJ Hamler had promised to become. So he's not saying it's a guarantee, but what he's saying is, if like he continues to develop, lands in the right spot, there's just a lot of upside here. So I love Xavier Worthy. He's one of my favorite picks right now in drafts, whether you're talking redraft or dynasty, because I think that there's an edge that you're getting based on where he's currently priced in the market.
Get some Will Fuller vibes from him as well, where it's like you would see Quinn Ewers just kind of look before the snap and like, all right, there's not a safety that's going to be able to get there.
It's not a guarantee, but 25% of the people with his profile have gone on to have a top 24 finish within their first two seasons in the NFL. 39% of them have gone on to have a top 36 finish, and 6% had a top 12 finish in their first two seasons. So I think there's quite a bit to like with Xavier Worthy.
And Chris, this isn't a one-year wonder. This isn't a guy who just, you know, all of a sudden we saw him run a fast 40 and like, we're about it. I mean, as a freshman at Texas, 981 yards, 12 touchdowns. If you remember the classic Red River shootout game, Caleb Williams, you know, coming out party there. First play of that freaking game, Worthy takes a freaking screen 75 yards to the house. So, you know, there's examples of him winning on whip routes around the goal line. I mean, that was my big thing here, Chris. Like, it was like, okay, can Xavier Worthy be more than just a straight line, deep threat? Yeah, I think he can be, man. As fun as it is to reference the 4-2-1-40, my man's also at a 41-inch vertical out here. I mean, it's almost like because he's so fast, we all just want to shout John Ross, but really, man, like if we,
that's a bad comp, man.
It's a really bad comp. But again, if you want to go ahead and look at, you know, the guys that have, you know, run the sub 4.340, it sure seems like Xavier Worthy is like one of the more complete wide receivers, if not the most complete one out of that group.
Yeah. And to speak to what both of you guys are saying is that that's where I think we'll take the 40 time. And because he broke John Ross's record, everyone will just comp him to John Ross. And it's like, no, you have to look back to like how they're actually being used on the field. Because let's go back to the Brian Thomas conversation we were just having. Primarily outside wide receivers. So the question is like, well, what is their route running capability? Like, can they, one, run a full route tree? And two, do they have the nuances in order to really excel at that position once they get into the NFL? If there are questions about it, that's where we have to start figuring out like, okay, well, what are they going to look like once they get into the pros? Now, if you go to Xavier Worthy, I wouldn't have the same questions about his route running because you can see in his splits, what, like 25, 30%, like from the slot. I mean, and 50% like out wide. Like he is running a diverse route tree, being asked to do different things on the field. And so if we already have that as a part of his collegiate profile, on top of the speed, on top of the yak after, I mean, the yak per reception, on top of, I mean, all the other traits and abilities we were able to see from the combine, then a lot of those questions that we were having about some of the guys that are already up there in the ranks, Brian Thomas, Odunze, like all those other guys, like all that, like now that starts to at least get smoothed over. But of course, now when you bring in the weight, you bring in the size, okay, now we can talk about like where he, like what the concerns would be for him, like in the pros. And if a team has to be a little bit more, let's say, thoughtful about what they do with him and where his landing spot and potential draft capital start, like what that means for a guy of his stature, 100%. But again, if you're coming into this saying, oh, he's a short dude that runs fast, you're missing like a lot of his game. You're missing the point of what he could do in the right type of offense. But I think for him specifically, since what was it? I think he, his yards per route running against man coverage, not last year, the 2022 was just over two, if I'm remembering right, like 2.1, 2.2, somewhere in there, which wasn't a massive shift or delta like from his zone coverage as well. And I think that was the case throughout most of his collegiate career. So it's like if he's capable of like not just being able to use his speed to like boost his efficiency numbers against zone coverage, also capable of winning against man coverage, and we see all of the like diversity in his routes, then he should be at least a guy that we should consider with the caveats that, again, because of the weight, because of the size, that might be something that like depending on landing spot, if he winds up going to a team it wouldn't happen, but let's say he falls to the Giants for whatever reason, less creative, more of a offense with other people that are with a larger competition might be less interested. But let's say he goes to Miami. Now everyone's starting to freak out. And I think that's where, again, it's the creativity that might be required for a guy like Worthy. But also once you get into a spot where it's like you can see how an offense would easily integrate like his skill set into it and the explosives that he can create regardless of the type of routes that he's running, that's where it's like full systems go. And I cannot wait to see like where this dude lands at.
Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy, and one more wide receiver is cracking Dwayne's tier three. Talk a little Troy Franklin, fellas. Oregon wide receiver one. Dwayne, he's the only other tier three wide receiver. for you, what puts him ahead of all the ballers in tier four and tier five? Obviously, you do, you know, pull up the film and you see the effortless, you know, just ability for him to separate out there. I got some, honestly, like Terry McLaurin vibes and even like a slightly smaller but faster version of Stevie Johnson. Shout out with some of the, you know, just kind of slow releases he'll be able to put out there. So do create separation for days. You see the 4-4-140, you know, on film all over the place. That said, is a little bit smaller, and as much as Bo Nix, you know, missed him on some of those touchdowns, man, you pull up some of those Oregon games and it's like defenses just had no idea what they were doing. Certainly benefited from a few busted coverages here or there. So overall thoughts on Troy Franklin, Dwayne, someone where, again, if we do see him slide into the bottom of round one, wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world.
Yeah, didn't have the same freshman year as Xavier Worthy did, but as a sophomore and a junior, it was really good. 2.07 RIPTA and 2.95. If you look at him versus expectation with teammates, he was plus 0.57. So just a lot of things that, you know, the adjusted career RIPTA likes about him. So he came out at the 59th percentile for that specific metric, which is behind Xavier Worthy at 69%, but ahead of Brian Thomas Jr., who was at the 44th percentile, because like we talked about, he didn't really do it till his junior season. Model gives him credit because that's still in the range, but wasn't quite as strong as these other two dudes. But Brian Thomas Jr., what we talk about, his ability to what score touchdowns and reward his quarterbacks when they targeted him. That was a big thing for Troy Franklin, rewarding his quarterbacks when they targeted him. 137.6 passer rating when he was targeted. That's the 86th percentile. That is the best in this class. So this is a guy you hear a lot about. His yak wasn't way over expected, 0.2 yards over expected after adjusting for his average depth of target. If you guys are not adjusting for average depth of target when you're looking at things like yak, catch rate, contested target rate, like it will change your whole perspective on everything. You've really got to go look at that because there's an inverse relationship with ADOT and mostly these data points that we really care about. So check it out. And if you're wanting to do some of your own analysis like this, I promise it's going to unlock some things for you. So looking at Troy Franklin, you know, he came in, if you look at the pre-draft model, Ian, 70th percentile is right there along Xavier Worthy, 74th and 76th for Brian Thomas Jr. You look at the, you know, with draft capital in it, again, using mock drafts right now, Brian Thomas Jr. leads the way at the 70th percentile, Xavier Worthy at 59th, and then 56th with Troy Franklin. Now, the next guy on our list is Ladd McConkey. He's 59th percentile in pre-draft capital. So that's the big reason there's the tier break. They're pretty close when you look at it with draft capital. 53rd percentile for McConkey. Troy Franklin's at the 56th. But as a tiebreaker, I use how well these guys look in the model without draft capital. So that's a big part of it, why Franklin ends up in this tier with these other three guys. And honestly, it won't surprise me any one of these guys could become a superstar from this tier. It could be Brian Thomas Jr. It could be Xavier Worthy. It could be Troy Franklin. I'm just less confident in telling you which one it's going to be. It could be two of them. It could be all three of them. It could be none of them. But they're in a good spot. Like, so you guys can go check out, you know, the supermodel over up on the site, but I give you the hit rates for what they look like as far as being a top 36, 24, or top 12 receiver. And you'll see their hit rates are all really close in this range.
Matthew Friedman has 4 mock draft versions now up available on fantasylife.com. And in his latest, he has 6 wide receivers going off the board in round 1. Marvin Harrison Jr., the Cardinals at number 4, as we all figure. Malik Nabers, the Giants at 6. Roma Dunze, the Bears at 9. I know one Matt Swing will love that one. And then where it gets interesting is further down the board. Because again, Chris, like we all kind of agree whether you want to put, you know, Nabers 1 or a Dunze 2. Like we all seem to agree those are the big 3. After that is where the landing spots can really start playing a role. So Friedman has Brian Thomas going to the Chargers with the 23rd pick. Adonai Mitchell, the teammate of Xavier Worthy, we'll talk about him maybe another time, going to the Bills at the 28th pick. And then Xavier freaking Worthy going to the Chiefs at 32. So that would be wild. That'd be a lot of fun to figure out. But it does seem like, Chris, because again, I'm not trying to take anything away from Troy Franklin, Worthy, or Brian Thomas Jr., but like these guys, it is kind of tough to feel overly confident about putting one ahead of the other. These landing spots, and specifically who can find a way to team up with Herbert, Josh Allen, or God forbid, Patrick freaking Mahomes out there, seems like that's going to end up being the tiebreaker here, and deservingly so.
Yeah, and I think that's how we're going to have, like, almost for all of the guys that you just mentioned, even the quarterbacks that wind up falling outside of the top 3 or top 5, once we hear the name, or once we associate the team name of where these guys get drafted to the quarterback that they're going to be attached to, that's almost an immediate like assignment of value like to those players. I mean, almost like draft capital be damned. I mean, like you were just saying, these could be guys that are all drafted in the first round, but it's like, oh, okay, well, he got first round draft capital, but he's going to the, I don't know, it's going to the Denver Broncos. Oh, okay, you know, no, less interested now. Or it gets a first round. I don't know why the Seahawks would do it, but it's like, oh, he's playing with Geno Smith. Oh, I don't really like, you know, I'm not a massive fan of Geno. I personally am. I'm just playing the hypothetical. That's where it becomes like more of a question. So yeah, I'm with you, man. Like that's where I become more like, not to say concern, but it's just when we see the, like when we have like fewer questions about these prospects, because we've either watched so much of their tape. A lot of their highlights have been just completely plastered across social media, like over the last couple of months, as more and more people have started entering into like draft Twitter, quote unquote. That's where it, like the guys that fall out of that. So the, like we were just talking about, like the Brian Thomases, Xavier Worthies, I mean, Adonai Mitchell, like, all of those guys where it's become more and more of a, like just a general question about like what they are outside of the numbers that are being presented, like their combine numbers, their pro day or whatever. That is where a lot of the questions will start to have, like what their fit is going to be within these offenses. And unless it's going to be a good offense, unless it's going to be with a great quarterback, I think a lot of folks that haven't taken the time to figure out like what their game is, like where each of these prospects can win. That's where I think a lot of the edge for people that have taken the time, put in the analysis, gone and taken a look at this awesome super rookie model that's currently up on the site. That's where those folks will start to lose out. And I think for us here, that when we're talking about it and for people that have already checked it out, we'll be the ones that actually get to take advantage of it.
A lot of models out there in the year 2024, only one supermodel. And again, you can find that on fantasylife.com for free. Gotta love that. Dwayne, again, you have so much great information on all these wide receivers, but in the, you know, just trying not to take a 6-hour podcast here, let's go ahead and just move on here to our last question for now about the supermodel. And that is, out of everyone in tier 4 or even tier 5, who do you feel most confident about actually providing us some fantasy goodness specifically in the year 2024? You do have 5 wide receivers listed in tier 4. And yeah, guess what? Like we said, it's a deep class. They are ballers. We got Ladd McConkey, who was able to stand out, especially on film in a loaded Georgia offense. Adonai Mitchell was once balling out in Georgia, and then he went to Texas and continued to ball out. Keon Coleman, whose highlights at Florida State are probably as good as anyone we've seen in recent memory. Jermaine Burton would be, I think, a much more popular round one conversation if he didn't maybe have the off-the-field history he does. Even Roman Wilson, the things he's done at Michigan, and even the Senior Bowl has had a ton of hype. I have seen like almost all of these names at one point or another floated at the bottom of the first round. And I don't think they're, you know, horrible reasons for, you know, doing so. So Dwayne, out of these guys or anyone else I didn't list, who stands out for you as, you know, maybe your favorite player that's not ranked inside the top 6?
Yeah, I'll give you 2 quick answers. First answer will be just what you asked, the favorite player. The other would just be, hey, based on if you're drafting right now, like you should just be taking this guy every draft, because like he's graded with all these guys that are going earlier and you're getting him for nothing. So let's start with Ladd McConkey as being the guy that I think has the best chance. And it's just because, like, you know, if you look at the program that he comes from, he's got good pedigree. He's moving up. There's nobody moving up as much as Ladd McConkey. Last year at this time, Ian, he was expected to be a round 5 draft pick. Now he's a borderline round 1 pick. Like he's looking like an early second round pick. These mock drafts are not always correct. Ladd McConkey could end up being a round 3 pick. They get less and less accurate the further the draft goes. So keep that in mind. So there's going to be some big movers after the draft is over. But it kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier. I was just surprised by how well he plays at all 3 levels. If you look at his depth of target profile, yeah, 26% of his targets came behind the line of scrimmage. That's above the 14% average for NCAA wide receivers. But he also had 20% of his targets come deep. No one knows this. That's right on par with an average wide receiver in the NCAA that had at least 250 routes in their career. And his intermediate game that I talked about earlier, 10 to 19 yards down the field, 30%. When you get into this layer of players, like you've got to start digging into the next level analysis. They're all going to come out pretty close in the supermodel when you look at the production scores for Ripta. But one other little thing here for McConkey, man. Career targeted quarterback rating index in the 79th percentile. Like, so when this dude gets his opportunities and he's out there, he's on the field and he didn't get to play all the time. And guys, he's not just a slot wide receiver. In fact, he lined up out wide more than he lined up in the slot. So he could potentially be a Z. Back to Chris talking about all the potential fits. When you get to the league, he could be a Z and a guy that could operate out of the slot. So that's going to give him some, that gives him a little bit of more versatility, right? And the kind of roles that he could land in, that opens up some outs for him, gives him the potential to land in more spots and still be successful. So really do like Ladd McConkey. And then the other name that really, you know, nobody's talking about, and it is just Jermaine Burton. Now, this is a guy that went to Alabama. He gets a lot of credit for going to a big program, but he was there, you know, and he's an older rookie, right? So that's hurting him. But he was pretty good. You know, he had a lot of competition for targets, so those things are helping him in the model. But the thing that I love the most is, like, the model grades him. It takes into account all those things, Ian. But right now, he's going the lowest out of all of these wide receivers in this tier. You can essentially get him for free. And that's what we're looking for when you create a model like this. Yeah, we want to talk about all the specific prospects, but one of the beauties of it is we don't have to fall in love with any one person. This is why I create the tiers. You can look at it and be like, wow, like, you know, and the other one here is Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson and Jermaine Burton are going way after the other guys in this tier.
Yeah.
That's a signal that we should be buying them now. Will they be guaranteed to hit? No, but they profile in a very similar manner. Their hit rates are very similar. So if we're just talking fantasy and we're just trying to think like macro game level here, Jermaine Burton and Roman Wilson are names that we should be very willing to click on, whether it's dynasty or redraft right now because of their ADPs.
Can't echo that Burton thought enough. I mean, again, guys, I've told you, just trying to get some big boards in here in best ball land, especially when I'm on the treadmill trying to be less fat. And like when you see Burton there just at the end of drafts, like he is going around a bunch of just backups that, again, I think here in a matter of just a short month, we're going to see nowhere close to the Georgia and more recently Bama product. Guys, going to talk all things Stephon Diggs, but first I want to give a shout out to our friends over at DraftKings, because this college basketball tournament has been one for the books with big plays and even bigger wins. The tourney might be nearing the finish line, but there's still time to get your bets in, and we have accordingly teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook, and right now all new customers who bet just $5 will instantly receive $150 in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our code QUESTIONS. The crown is yours after all. But that's right, everyone, new customers bet just $5 on anything and you'll get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action. Use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. Combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and more. And hey, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, don't worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have a shot to win cash prizes. Again, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers, use our promo code QUESTIONS. Bet just $5 on any wager and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code QUESTIONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. I was having a nice little morning, guys, trying to grind some film. I was specifically watching Xavier Worthy. You know, I had a Malik Nabers profile. I even have a freaking article going up on relating the total eclipse to fantasy football. So, busy little morning in the Harditz household, and I get to drop all of that because, my God, Stephon Diggs gets traded to the Houston Texans. Now, if you guys have been paying attention to Stephon Diggs' Twitter over the years, you'll notice that he has been one to send the cryptic sort of tweets. You know, shout out Denny Carter for being over this, you know, all over the years. But yeah, you know, certainly does fit the stereotype for what we would expect from a wide receiver on Twitter. So overall trade, the Texans get Stephon Diggs, a fifth and sixth round pick, and the Bills will get a 2025 second round pick in return. So Chris, just overall impressions, man, because I know Diggs didn't exactly leave, you know, the best taste in fantasy managers or even Bills fans' mouths with those final 10 games of 2023, but come on, man. Ever since this dude came into the league, like, we don't need more than two hands to count the number of wide receivers that have been better than him.
That is true. And I think that's where you will see a lot of the immediate reaction from Bills fans is like, well, he was washed up anyway, so we didn't really want him. You know, like he faded down the stretch last season and like he was barely visible in the playoffs anyway, so we didn't really want him. It's like, you didn't really want a guy that was like, you know, habitually hitting over like 1,100 yards and, you know, like going, like had a couple of all pros and like, all, you don't want that. You don't need that on your roster, especially with a quarterback as good as Josh Allen. Okay, fine. I mean, over the last with Buffalo four seasons, averaged well over 25% of the targets, like throughout all four. And the competition for targets was just minimal. I think for his first like three seasons, if not like for the entire up until like last year, none of the other wide receivers that he was playing alongside like got over 20% of the targets. It wasn't until last year that we actually started to see like somebody even get close to that. But still, it's like he has been like the wide receiver one like for that team like since he got there, and for them to lose that type of player, and for a guy like CJ Stroud to gain that type of player like with the weapons that he already has like down in Houston, I mean, that's a massive hole like for Buffalo. I'm At least the question is like whether or not there's going to be another shoe to drop. Like, for does Buffalo want to try and make a move with the pick that they acquired to get a guy like Brandon Ayuk? Don't think they have the cap space for a T. Higgins, just given like what T is like, at least what the reports have been, like what T is asking for. But in my mind, like the with what Stephon Diggs has been to not just Buffalo, but to the entire league in terms of understanding the, honestly, I would say that for my purposes, like 5-6 years ago, trying to look at like wide receivers, I think he was one of the first, at least receivers in my mind, that started that conversation about how you can win as a, like, what are the different ways that a wide receiver can win on the field? Mm-hmm. And we started at, I think, in like the discourse around like wide receiver started to happen a bit more and more around like his ascension, because it, he didn't fit the mold of your, like your typical like wide receiver one, but it was like, okay, well, if he doesn't, well then like, how is he doing this? Like, what are the skill set that he has, or what are the traits that he has that allows him to do this? And for, you know, for Minnesota to move on from him and get Justin Jefferson, but to still see Diggs like remain relevant throughout the years, like I just think it's been a testament to his game and so much of the skill set that we are, start to attribute with some of these new wide receivers like coming into the league nowadays. And like like I said, for my purposes, like Stephon Diggs has been one of the favorite players like I've loved to watch. So I mean, like, shout out to CJ Stroud, because you got a real one, man.
Former fifth round pick. I mean, what a career. We're talking about six straight seasons clearing 1,000 yards. He had at least six touchdowns all those years. Fantasyland PPR wide receiver 3, wide receiver 7, wide receiver 4, and wide receiver 9 during his time in Buffalo. So I see a bunch of people on social media, because it's always just such a great place to go to get, you know, nuance and rational takes, you know, just pointing out how much of a locker room problem he apparently is. Again, I understand our most recent stretch of games wasn't ideal, but show me an alpha number one wide receiver that doesn't want the football, and I will show you a freaking liar. Yep. Give me a break, Bills fans. How about you devote that criticism to your stupid-ass kicker who couldn't make a chip shot and accordingly kept, you know, your sad-ass franchise history from, you know, going into overtime against the Chiefs. Miss me with that, Dwayne.
Yeah, and it's the splits, man. Anytime you see people grabbing splits just in a random way, like, hey, look at the first half of the year versus the second half of the year. It just doesn't work that way. Stephon Diggs was awesome in the early part of the year, not as good later in the year. Well, maybe it had something to do with Joe Brady. Joe Brady took over as the play caller, and that helped out certain people, but not others. You know, Scott Barrett just threw out this tweet a little bit ago that, you know, said he had a major NFL insider tell him that, you know, Joe Brady's not well respected around the league because he can't scheme guys open. So maybe that's what had Stephon Diggs pissed off. Maybe it just wasn't about not getting the ball. Who knows? I know I threw out a little bit of a, you know, jab at Stephon saying you're going to land in Houston, you see Tank Dell and Nico Collins, and realize, yeah, probably not going to get as many targets as you just had in Buffalo. And I think that's probably going to be the case. But I think the real thing people care about, like, is what does this do for fantasy? Chris already mentioned it. Big for CJ Stroud. Like, he's got a loaded room. I would say the next biggest thing here
Stroud
is
Stroud or Mahomes, Wayne.
Do what? Stroud or Mahomes?
That's where we're
I'm
at.
I'm still going Mahomes. Kendall asked me about this. I think
what if
Kendall
Rice is out?
Yeah, if Rice is out, yeah, then yes, I would go with Stroud. But because Mahomes got to add Hollywood Brown, I don't think Rice is going to be out based on the great thread by Drew Davenport. He does elaborate that, look, we still need more information. You guys go check out Drew over on Twitter if you haven't seen, you know, anytime you got legal stuff, Drew's the go-to. Ian and I both love him. Chris does. Chris loves him because he gets to play poker with him. I don't get to do that.
I get to take some of his money every now and again, yeah.
Well, he probably takes some of yours too. Drew's pretty good. He takes all yours. But like Dalton Kincaid's the other big winner here, yeah. Ian. So I didn't finish the answer. I would still take Mahomes, right? And then I would go to Stroud, but they're close. They're right there. If Rashee Rice can't play, yes, I would take Stroud. But then Dalton Kincaid, he's up to my tight end 5 now. He was my tight end 9. I moved him ahead. The ranks are all updated over at fantasylife.com for the trade. So I would take Dalton Kincaid ahead of George Kittle. I would take him ahead of Kyle Pitts. I would take him ahead of Njoku, Evan Ingram. I'm going to move him up in front of all those guys. He's now, I would take him ahead of Brock Bowers, who we'll get to next week because I'm working on the tight end supermodel. And I think the other other biggest winner is whatever wide receiver we've been talking about today that the Bills take at pick 28. Like, they're going to get a lot of smoke, if you will, in fantasy drafts as soon as we find out who that pick's going to be. Now, naturally, they won't take a wide receiver there. It'll be like, you know, a safety or something. And then low key, man, and I'll leave the floor to you here, Harditz, but Curtis Samuel. I know a lot of people want Khalil Shakir, and I'm not totally against him, but I tell you right now, Curtis Samuel, I do believe at this stage of his career, is still the better option than Khalil Shakir if I had to put a chip down on another pass catcher in Buffalo.
And I know Brandon being in Buffalo now has this thing where, like, if you get 30 years old, you're pretty much dead to him. You know, the Leonardo DiCaprio GM's out here. But, yeah, Curtis is still only 27, just got paid. Like, I didn't expect him to have that big of a role in Buffalo, but at this point might not have much of a choice. So, Dwayne, just, yeah, pretty much did the same exact, you know, ranking changes that you did. I was, like, tight end 10 on Kincaid, and now he's up tight end 5.
How far did you move down? I didn't mention I was leaving also for you, Nico and Tank. Like, I had Nico at 9, yeah, and I think he's at 23 now, and Tank's right around him. They're like borderline wide receiver 2s for me. I would take Malik Nabers over those guys now. Borderline whether or not I would take Romo Dunze over those guys now. So they had a significant drop as well for me.
Dwayne has Nico wide receiver 24. I have him wide receiver 26. Dwayne has Dell wide receiver 25. I'm just a little lower at 33. I don't have a great reason.
Which, hey, man, honestly, it was first gut reaction. You're looking at players and like where to put them so people can use it if they're drafting right now. I'll have to think about it some more, but I don't have an argument against 33, to be honest.
It's again, they're both going to still be in that wide receiver 3 range, but you just get to the point where you're looking at other really good wide receivers, Amari Cooper, Terry McLaurin, and guys that just aren't going to have as much target competition. So Stephon Diggs, certainly, you know, I do expect him to be the most productive wide receiver in Houston, but I still think that's going to be closer to that wide receiver 2 borderline. I think it was maybe Hayden Winks who said, like, yeah, you know, do you guys enjoy trying to go through Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and George Kittle every single week? That's pretty much what we're going to have to do now.
But Houston, more pass-friendly offense with we like Purdy, but with a better quarterback, an offense is more willing to air it. You know, I mean, they got Joe Mixon. I'm sorry, Chris, at running back. I know it was nice for what they got him for, but like, you're not going to center the offense around Mixon. Like, he's going to get some game script stuff, but I fully expect the Texans to try to maximize Stroud, run more 11 personnel. So I think this is a little bit better of a situation, but like, at a high level, yes, Hayden's right. And that's honestly when I moved Diggs down, I got to Ayuk and I got to Debo, and I was like, well, I can't move him below those two guys because I think this offense could throw a little more. But, you know, same kind of thought process. Obviously, Hayden's super sharp fantasy player.
Dalton Schultz, minor downgrade, but, you know, he's just still sitting at that tight end one borderline.
I couldn't find guys to move him below was the challenge. But
that's what I'm saying.
I moved him down, but I couldn't move him down past a lot of different tight ends.
So, you know, they have 36 million reasons now to continue to feed Dalton Schultz the football, at least a good amount. Yeah, he's not going to be a 120 target guy, but still has nice touchdown upside. Dwayne mentioned Kincaid being the big winner. And yeah, Curtis Samuel, someone I moved up to wide receiver 44, pretty much right there with like Jackson Smith and Njigba now in that wide receiver 4 tier. So if somehow, you know, Chris is right and they don't add a round 1 wide receiver, maybe that could change things. But yes, very happy about Curtis, you know, especially just as a longtime truther perspective. I think he's going to be a real nice real life addition for Buffalo. Probably not going to be getting, you know, a complete booming wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2 in fantasy land, though. Honestly, at cost, the best wide receiver you can get in Buffalo right now, I think it's Mac Hollins, guys. I think they just view him as a cheaper, you know, slightly worse version than Gabe Davis. And he's
going
so far outside the top 100 right now. Like, there are far worse, you know, 20th. This is always like the, you know, oh, this is how great I feel about this player. Draft him in the very last round of your fantasy draft. So I know, not going on the biggest limb, but Mac Hollins, man, if he gave us like 600 yards and, you know, 6-7 touchdowns.
It wouldn't surprise me if he duplicated Gabe Davis. To be fair,
he can do
what you're saying, but I don't think very much of Gabe Davis, as people know. I'm on the record. You're the you know, you're against the Dalton Schultz family. Apparently, I'm against the Lazard and Gabe Davis families. So I'm gonna have to make it up in some way. But it won't be this, because I guess I'll have to take some Mac Hollins. We'll see.
Yeah.
It won't be this. Fellas, great job, and great job to all you listeners out there. Always appreciate you guys tuning in to the Fantasy Life Podcast. We're going to continue to have all sorts of fun draft-related content going on through April. And yeah, just trying to help get everyone better one day at a time, and then go win those fantasy championships when it comes time to do so. So for Dwayne, for Chris, for producer James, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning in to the Fantasy Life Podcast. And until next time, take care. Everybody.